Welcome back to Punk Goes Pride. I am your host. It's me. It's Tate Logan. How's it going? I hope you're having a wonderful Monday evening. This is a special episode. It's a little weird. It's a little different. Going off the rails a little bit, but I'm excited about it. This episode, I'm going to be focusing on my top five biggest musical influences that are queer. So I basically want to talk about, like, the five different artists that influenced me the most as far as, like, specifically queerness. So not necessarily music-wise, not necessarily, like, songwriting or anything like that, but most specifically the way that they presented themselves, the way that they answered interview questions and carried themselves, and maybe some of the stuff that they wrote in their songs or how they performed live, basically anything that influenced me or inspired me, rather, to be more open about my identity. So this list was actually kind of hard for me to make because I could list a lot of queer artists now that I am a big fan of, that I really love, that I think are super, super talented. But I wanted this to be more about, like, my growing up experience and what kind of, like, helped me come out of the closet, for lack of a better term. And so despite loving a bunch of queer artists now, I didn't have them. I didn't have those artists when I was growing up. I mean, shit, that's half the reason that I'm doing this show, is to highlight the artists that we've got now, because when I was younger, there weren't any that I at least was being exposed to. And so coming up with this list was kind of hard, because I was like, okay, I love all these queer bands. They're all so great, but none of them directly inspired me growing up. I just love them now that I am queer and have all my shit figured out. But that wasn't the point. That's not the point of this episode. The point of this episode is to highlight the artists that inspired me as I was in my, like, formative years. And that list is actually very small, you know? Like, there were not a lot of artists. So that being said, the ones that I do have on this list are very, very important to me because they were so hard to find and hard to relate to. Like, there's not a single trans guy on my list, which is weird and kind of sad, because now there would be. There's tons of trans artists out there now. And I know that there were trans artists then, in the early 2000s when I was growing up, and in the 2010s when I was in high school and stuff. But like I said, I was not exposed to them. They were not in the media that I was consuming on a regular basis. And luckily now that is changing. But back to the point being, this is my top five list of what I was being exposed to in, like, 2006. So very different than what my list would be now. So I just wanted to, like, clarify that. So another thing that was really hard for me when making this list was putting them in order from five to one. My number one was super easy. Like, it is hands down a no-brainer for me. And I'm not going to tell you yet because that's not exciting. What's exciting is doing the countdown. So we're going to start from five, and then we're going to do four, and then three, and then two, and then one. But number one was easy. It was a no-brainer. Number two was easy. It was also a no-brainer. But doing three, four, and five was really hard. It was really hard for me to put these in order because I love them, like, very equally for very different reasons. So I don't know. I might even switch it up halfway through. I might be like, you know what? Actually, no, that's number four. Okay, so anyway, without further ado, my number five biggest queer influence is a band that no longer exists, but I really, really encourage you to go check them out. They are a grunge, glamour, garage rock band called Semi-Precious Weapons. I was obsessed with this band. Everything about them. Their lyrics were dirty and raunchy and lyrics that I felt like I shouldn't have been listening to in, like, the seventh or eighth grade. I was exposed to them when I was probably, like, I don't know, like 13 years old. And I don't even think my parents knew I was listening to this shit, honestly. Like, I don't think that they knew. I have a funny story. So I can remember getting literally grounded. Like, I literally got in trouble. I got my phone taken away, got my laptop taken away. I couldn't hang out with friends after school for, like, a week, because I posted one of their lyrics as a caption on my MySpace. My God, that's the most emo thing I've ever heard in my life. So they had this song, and in the song, gosh, what was the name of the song? This is going to drive me crazy. I think it's just called Semi-Precious Weapons. I think that's just like the name of the song. Yeah, it's like their title song from their title track of their debut album. So it's called Semi-Precious Weapons. And the opening line of the song is, "I can't pay my rent, but I'm fucking gorgeous." Incredible. Incredible lyricism. And I remember putting that as a caption on one of my photos. And my mom saw it. And she was so mad that I had used the F word on the internet as like a middle schooler. She was like, "We do not talk like this. This is bad. We do not say the F word on the internet. It's going to be there forever. People will always see this. What happens when you're trying to get a job?" Which is fucking hilarious, because here I am now on the air saying the F word over and over and over again, which I should probably cool it with that a little bit. But there you go, Mom. Ha ha ha. I'm just kidding. I love my mother. My mom is my best friend, and she'll think that this is funny. But so anyways, my point is, they were really raunchy. I shouldn't have been listening to them in middle school, but I didn't care because they were like the coolest band I'd ever seen in my life. I discovered them when I was, like I said, in middle school, but the first time I ever saw them, they were opening for Lady Gaga. But now keep in mind, this was not anywhere near the capacity that Lady Gaga is now. She was playing in very small clubs, maybe 2,000-3,000 people. Like, think about that. She fills out arenas and sells them out like five nights in a row. It's crazy. This was in a little tiny club theater thing called the Fox Theater in Atlanta, Georgia. And I went to see her for my 14th birthday. It was the greatest day of my freaking life. And this shitty little band called Semi-Precious Weapons opened for her. And it was like an out-of-body experience for me, to be honest with you. They were men, or men, male-presenting at the time. I didn't have the language for it now. And I believe that a couple of the members are perhaps non-binary. I'm not 100% sure, so I don't want to assume anything and misgender anyone. I know that they use he, him pronouns. So I'm going to roll with that for now. Try to be respectful. But they dressed very, very femininely. Like, the lead singer, his name is Justin Tranter, who is an incredible person that I'm going to talk about in a minute. You know who he is, even if you don't think you do, but I'll get there in a second. So they come out on stage. Justin Tranter is wearing high heel stilettos, skinny jeans, and a like fishnet top. I had never been exposed to anything like that before. I mean, Lady Gaga was really over the top. She was also a woman, and people were kind of like expecting that sort of style from her. Like, it was what she was known for. I had never in my life, growing up in a tiny town in South Carolina, had been exposed to a man wearing high heels and fishnets and being like super provocative on stage. And it was so eye-opening for me. Like, I was so drawn to this. LOL, hashtag gay. But I remember they came out and they were singing about champagne and sex and cigarettes and rock and roll. And they were all, you know, some of their songs had like what felt like heavy metal parts in it. And Justin Tranter was just flailing around on the stage. I remember there's a part where he literally does an outfit change on the stage, strips down basically to his underwear, changes his heels, changes his pants. He puts on like latex, like leather pants and a different fishnet top. Like, it was just so over the top. It felt like theater. It was so cool. And I loved it. I bought a t-shirt. And now, as a 26-year-old guy, I find myself very influenced by their fashion because it feels very like Motley Crue, that like 80s glam rock, and they had that shit in the bag in like 2008 probably. And actually, in my very, very first music video for my song Kill Me to Try, I am wearing the Semi-Precious Weapons t-shirt that I bought in the 7th grade. That is how old that t-shirt is. But I wanted to wear it as kind of like a little Easter egg, a little like homage, you know, nod to how much they inspired me at the time, because I remember walking away from that and being like, I've never seen an artist do anything like that. That was the coolest thing I've ever seen. You know, I was used to guys in bands wearing Vans and skinny jeans and snapbacks, and to walk out, or this guy to walk out in high heels and a fishnet shirt and sing rock and roll music, to me as a middle schooler, was absolutely revolutionary. So even though this band doesn't exist anymore, all of their music is still out there. You can stream all of it. Semi-Precious Weapons, that's the name of the band. That's the name of their album. I think they put out, oh gosh, two records, I think. It's like You Love You. Yeah, You Love You is the name of one of them, and then Semi-Precious Weapons is the other one. And I think that they put out a song kind of recently, maybe like 20, I say recently, it was like 2014, but that feels more recent than when I was listening to them. But here's the really cool part. All of these members of this band went on to do really, really cool things after the band, like, I don't know if they broke up or just went on a hiatus, I'm not really sure. But some of the members are now in, I don't know if it's Dance or DNCE, it's Joe Jonas's band. The band that Joe Jonas did after the Jonas Brothers, or I guess in between stints of the Jonas Brothers. You know, they do Cake by the Ocean. I know you know the band. I think two or three of the members from Semi-Precious Weapons are in that band. Because I remember, I think the guy's name is Cole. Yeah, it's Cole Whittle, I believe. So I recognized him because of his hairstyle. Like, Google him, it's crazy. It's like half of his head is shaved and then the other half, it's like he's got a mohawk on the side of his head. I don't know, he had the same hairstyle when he was in Semi-Precious Weapons. He had the same hairstyle in DNCE. So recognized him. I was like, wow, that's so cool that he went on to be a part of this band with one of the dudes in the Jonas Brothers. Like, that's so sick, what a small world. But most notably is Justin Tranter's experience. He went on to write like every pop song that you have ever loved in the last like 10 years. Like, no, seriously, I'm not even kidding. He has written for Britney Spears, Gwen Stefani, Kelly Clarkson, Selena Gomez, Justin Bieber, Kesha, Imagine Dragons, 5 Seconds of Summer, Lady Gaga, Demi Lovato, Dua Lipa, Måneskin, Fall Out Boy. Like, this dude has written half of the songs that you've heard on the radio in the last like 10 years. Like, seriously, it's insane. It's also like really, really inspiring to me because Semi-Precious Weapons felt like the coolest thing in the world to me in like 2009, 2010. And then when they broke up, it was really disheartening because I was like, man, this guy that I looked up to so much, that I found so much like comfort and like expression in, isn't doing anything anymore. And now their band's over and now I don't have that like outlet, which wasn't true at all. He went on to do incredible things, which is so inspiring. I remember seeing that he had a credit on a Justin Bieber song from his album Purpose, and that blew my mind. I was so excited. I was like, oh my God, this guy that was so crazy and dressed so weird and did all of these things that were so out of the box at the time, and which was so inspiring to me, went on to be one of the most prolific songwriters of my generation. And I can't get over that. So hey, Justin Tranter, if for whatever reason you are listening to this, I'm a huge fan of you. You inspire me so much. I think that you are absolutely incredible, and I would love to have you on the show. So hey, if you're hearing this, please, please, I would love to have you on the show. You are so cool. And thank you for being so incredible and for inspiring me the way that you did. It's unmatched for me, and I'll remember that and have that experience and that confidence for the rest of my life. So thank you. Anyways, go stream Semi-Precious Weapons. I'm trying to think of what my favorite song would be. Gosh, that's tricky. There are so many. Put a Diamond in It is amazing. Oh my God, Leave Your Pretty to Me. Rock and Roll Never Looked So Beautiful. Wow, God, there's so many good ones. I'm about to go listen to that right after this. I'm going to go listen to it in just a minute. But yeah, so Semi-Precious Weapons, number 5 biggest queer influence on me. Love that band. Okay, so let's move on. Now we are at number 4. Semi-Precious Weapons was my number 5. At number 4, this is... people are going to think this is kind of basic, but it's the truth. This is my list. I can do whatever I want with it. At number 4, I have David Bowie. Also his alter ego, Ziggy Stardust. Equal parts. Okay, I have to be completely honest. I don't know all of David Bowie's music. I'm not like a stan. I couldn't, you know, list off every single B-side from every single one of his records or anything like that. But I am a huge fan of the music that I do know, but mostly for what he did for the generation that came before me. And that's kind of where I want to like keep my focus on Bowie for me. So David Bowie broke a lot of barriers for like my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation, which is really, really important for who I am as an artist. Because if I didn't have these artists like David Bowie or like Prince or like Freddie Mercury, and I love them all, but Bowie is my favorite, we wouldn't have made the strides that we have today. And that's a really important puzzle piece to me, is kind of recognizing people that laid the groundwork for the, you know, steps that we've been able to make since then. And I think that David Bowie really did that for the generation before me. And that's so cool. And that's so important. Like, his music was awesome, obviously. You know, I mean, he's legendary. He's like arguably one of the biggest pop stars of ever, you know, but he didn't only do it in music, but he did it in film. He did it in culture. He did it in art. He was in like erotic films, and just, it's his style. It's the way he presented himself. It's the way that he carried himself. He broke so many boundaries and so many gender role expectations. And I think that that is so crucial for where we are today. And that's why I think that David Bowie is so cool. I think he's incredible. And he was kind of one of the first people to open the minds of like my parents or my grandparents, like in pop culture, like I said. So before that, and this is my opinion, but before that, there wasn't a lot of, you know, just like open gender bending, I feel like, in mainstream media, at least. Like, you'll always have that happening in the underground. Always. Always has been. Forever and ever and ever. But for David Bowie to have multiple number one records, to be on TV constantly, to be on the cover of every magazine and in everybody's face, being the person that he was, and being as feminine and as flamboyant as he was different for that time period, especially in the 70s. Like, the 70s was ruled by really like masculine dudes in rock bands singing about sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And don't get me wrong, I love plenty of those bands, but they all had long hair and bell-bottom jeans and, you know, their chests out with chest hair. And they were talking about, you know, sleeping with women and doing drugs. And David Bowie came into the scene and was like, I'm going to make everybody uncomfortable in a cool way. And I'm going to make you question your sexuality because I'm hot. Like, that is so cool to me. He had no regards or no fear or no hesitation towards being the person that he wanted to be. And I think that that is so inspiring. And so I felt like I needed to include him on this list as someone that laid the groundwork for artists to come after him. And that's kind of the best way that I can phrase it. Like, I think that that's incredible. I think that he's an awesome artist that deserves all of the recognition that he's ever gotten. And, you know, long live David Bowie. Cool. So we've done number 5 and we have done number 4 on my list of top 5 most influential queer artists to me personally. This feels like a good time to play a song. I want to play you some of my music. I haven't really talked about my music too much on this podcast, but since we're talking about queerness and we're talking about artists and we're talking about being inspired by them, I felt like for this episode, it would be cool to play you a couple of my songs. I recently put out an EP called Double Feature, and I thought that was funny and quirky because it's only 2 songs, but I put them out at the same time, so I thought Double Feature was clever. So we're gonna do that. The first track is Better Days. This is by me. This is Better Days by Tate Logan. LOL. Candy for dinner, always sleeping off the dopamine. Come down for breakfast, cut with doses of reality. This diet glamour life is catching up with me. Shake all the glitter off, am I shiny underneath? Eyes wide, drenched in sweat, but hey, I'm not dead yet. On my better days, I still can be an asshole. I don't notice, I don't seem to see it at all. Maybe I'm a dick, maybe I'm a prick, when I get a little overwhelmed. Cook me in sugar, baby, you won't be able to tell. You
money pressed into circles, my closest friends prescribe. Muffle the noises in my head, find them a new place to hide. This diet glamour life is catching up with me. Shook all the glitter off, nothing shiny underneath. Comfort disguised as threat, but hey, I'm not dead yet. On my better days, I still can be an asshole. Sugar baby, you won't be able to tell. On my better days, I still can be an asshole. I don't notice, I don't seem to see it at all. Maybe I'm a dick, maybe I'm a prick. When I get a little overwhelmed, cut me in sugar baby.
And we're back. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for listening to that. I really appreciate it. That was my song, Better Days. So we have done number 5. We have done number 4. I'm going to kind of stick with the David Bowie thing for a second and do my number 3 as the wonderful Elton John. My God, I love Elton John. Now, a minute ago when I said that I love David Bowie more for his persona and his cultural impact and not necessarily all of his music, that's so different for me with Elton John. Elton John, I love his music. I know so much of it. He's arguably wrote one of my favorite songs of all time, Tiny Dancer, also Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatter's, two of my absolute all-time favorite songs. Now, I'm going to go a little bit off track here and talk about how I was exposed to Elton John. So my favorite movie in the entire world is this movie called Almost Famous. And it's a Cameron Crowe movie. It came out in 2000, 2001 maybe. It's got a stacked cast of people that are very young. It's like it's Kate Hudson, it's Jimmy Fallon, Billy Crudup, Patrick Fugit, I believe is how you say his last name. It's F-U-G-I-T. I want to say fuck it, like Patrick fuck it, but I don't think that's right. Anyways, all of these actors and actresses went on to have really big careers. And, oh, Zooey Deschanel's in it too. But this is like a lot of their first movies, which I think is really cool. Anyway, the movie follows this boy, William, who is in high school and he's an aspiring music journalist. He works for this magazine called Cream Magazine. And he kind of like finesses his way into getting a gig at Rolling Stone. They think he's much older than he is. He's pretending to not be like 15. He's pretending to be a grown man. And Rolling Stone sends him on tour with an up-and-coming band called Stillwater. And the movie basically follows the journey of this band struggling for stardom in the 70s and this teenager struggling for success in music journalism following along with the band. It is the best movie I have ever seen by a million miles. Like, I have Almost Famous tattooed on my legs. It is my favorite movie of all time. And the most iconic scene from this movie, they're all on the tour bus, and they've all just kind of had a rough night. They got into a huge fight, and they're all sitting in silence, and everyone's mad at each other. And Elton John's song, Tiny Dancer, comes on, and everyone slowly but surely starts singing along to the song because they just can't help it. And then by halfway through the first chorus, everyone on the bus is singing together in this beautiful harmony, even though they were all just fighting. And it's such an incredible scene because it really just kind of highlights the power of music and the camaraderie that it can create. And it's such a beautiful scene. And that was the first time that I heard Tiny Dancer, or at least the first time that I heard it in a way that I was listening to it for real. And it became one of my favorite songs of all time. And I went on to listen to pretty much all of Elton John's discography. But this man was unapologetically gay. And that is so cool. Like, he was then, he is now. He works with so many up-and-coming queer artists. Up-and-coming kind of in the mainstream. Like, he worked with Lady Gaga. He's worked with, like, Lil Nas. I'm pretty sure he's worked with, like, oh my gosh, like, Young Thug or, like, Juice WRLD. Like, it's crazy. He really makes an effort to stay connected to the younger generation and be involved in what they do and support what they do. And I think that is so cool. Like, I think it's so awesome that he was an openly gay man and was so flamboyant and wore all of the things that he did. And he wrote so many songs that if you are a queer person, you can hear the queerness in it. Like Your Song and Daniel, and I mean, even like Candle in the Wind isn't necessarily about queerness, but the song is gay, man. Come on. Like, it's just so great. Like, God, Elton John is such an incredible just performer. You know, he works with someone else that helps him write his songs. A very talented man named Bernie Taupin, I believe. Anyways, just the piano playing, the emotion that he can provoke, it just, his songs feel safe to me. And this kind of goes back to what I was kind of saying about David Bowie, where he really changed the minds of a lot of people that are older than my generation. And I think that like Elton John was kind of the first artist that I was exposed to where everyone was just like, yeah, he's gay. And that's it. It wasn't like, there was no animosity, there was no judgment, there was no hatred towards him, because who doesn't love Elton John? It's like his songs were so good and so well written and so relatable that people that would normally be judgmental and hateful couldn't even do that because they like the music so much. And I'm not saying that that's how it should be. It absolutely should not be. You should respect everyone regardless of their identity or their sexuality. But he was able to change the minds of people and make people accept him who maybe normally wouldn't. And there is a lot of power in that for growth and for change. And I think that that is absolutely incredible. Like, you know, my grandpa's out here like, yeah, Elton John smacks, you know? And like, that's crazy because it's just, it was a different time period and people had different mindsets. And luckily we have made big strides and a lot has changed since then. But it's because of people like David Bowie and Elton John. So I guess to summarize my number three spot being Elton John is that you should absolutely go watch the movie Almost Famous. He's got multiple songs in the movie, so you should check that out. And also just like, go listen to Tiny Dancer, go listen to any of his songs, honestly. Like, Mona Lisa's and Mad Hatter's is probably my favorite song by him, and I don't even know if it was a single, it's kind of like a B-side, but it's absolutely my favorite, so go check that out. Shout out, Elton John, you're incredible, so inspiring. Love you so much. All right. We are getting down to the nitty gritty now. Just number two and number one. Let's go. So we're going to take kind of a hard shift now because I started out with Semi-Precious Weapons and then I spent a little bit of time talking about two artists that are older, not from this generation, David Bowie, Elton John. But now we're going to make it a little bit more modern and kind of shift where the inspiration and influence was coming from. So that being said, my number two artist on this list is the wonderful and miraculous Tegan and Sarah. Tegan and Sarah are very, very, very special to me because they came to me, like I was exposed to them at a time in my life where I was in a WLW relationship. So before I came out as trans, everybody thought I was a lesbian because I hadn't transitioned yet. I hadn't come out as trans yet. And I was perceived as a girl dating another girl. So I felt like I was in a lesbian relationship for multiple years of my high school career or whatever. And at the time, I was mostly listening to, like, punk bands, like Mayday Parade and All Time Low and The Story So Far and that sort of stuff. And there was no queerness anywhere in that. But I was also going through this weird, like, indie emo phase where I was listening to, like, Bright Eyes and Teen Suicide and this band called Dads and, like, Modern Baseball and Tiny Moving Parts and, like, stuff like that. And that's kind of how I discovered Tegan and Sarah, was because they, before they put out a bunch of pop music, they were very much so like an indie rock band. Like, their first album and their second and third, I'm pretty sure, were all like very, very, very indie rock. And then with Heartthrob, they kind of took a hard left turn and made a pop record, which I love. I absolutely love that record. If you are familiar with Tegan and Sarah, it's probably for one of two reasons. Either their song Closer, which was huge on the radio in maybe like 2013, 2014, or from their feature in the Lego Movie, they did Everything is Awesome. Everything is Awesome, which is actually surprising because I didn't know that until like way later. I was like, what? Tegan and Sarah did this song? That's hilarious. I mean, I'm pretty sure they like wrote it for the movie, but whatever, that doesn't matter. So when I was in high school, I discovered them, and I think I had them on like a playlist or something. And anyway, I bought a live session that they did on a record store day, and they have this song called Monday, Monday, Monday. And that song, God, it just like ripped my freaking heart out. God, that song, Alligator, 19, I know. And then honestly, all of Heartthrob, because that record, even though it's a pop record, I was listening to that like crazy. But when I first listened to them, I knew that they were twins, Tegan and Sarah. I believe Quinn's their last name, Tegan and Sarah Quinn. And I knew that they were sisters. I knew that they were twin sisters, but I didn't know that they were queer until I became like totally obsessed with them and was like Googling them and everything about them and everything. But which is really funny because their music is so queer coded. Like if, and that's kind of an interesting part to this is like, when you're not exposed to queerness, or if you're not like looking for it or aware of it, things just like inherently feel straight, which is hilarious because when I was first listening to Tegan and Sarah, I was like, oh, these songs are probably about boys. And then I really did like a deep dive and I was like, there's no fucking way. This shit is gay as hell. Like, and they were kind of the first time that I couldn't decide if I wanted to be them or be with them, if that makes sense. Like Tegan was very masculine presenting, she uses she, her pronouns. She's very much so identifies as a woman, but she was very like tomboy, very mask vibes. And when I was, 15 and struggling with my gender identity, I had never even at that point kind of experimented with my style. I had up until that point dressed pretty femininely, and seeing Tegan be this sort of like inspiration to me, like I went and saw them live one time. I've actually seen them live twice. I saw them open up for a band called Fun, and then I saw them headline with this band called Lucius, which are also very incredible. But both times Tegan came out in like skinny jeans, like an oversized t-shirt with like a hat on, like a beanie or a snapback and like boots. And like, I don't know, it was very cool to see this woman dress kind of masculine and still be like really confident. And like I said, I grew up in a tiny town. I didn't really have any sort of diversity like that I was being exposed to. So to see her do that was inspiring to me. And it honestly kind of like kick-started my journey into self-discovery with my gender identity, because I was like, oh wow, well if Tegan is as cool as she is and can wear these like more masculine clothes, then I can too. And I started wearing more masculine clothes, and then that was just kind of like a domino effect into discovering what made me the most comfortable and the way that I felt the most myself. And I also just thought that it was really cool that they were both queer, like having two sisters in a band that are both queer and writing songs about being women and being in love with other women. I just found that like really, really inspiring and really, really beautiful. And I love Tegan and Sarah. I still do to this day. They have a wonderful foundation that they began together. And I just think that they're really beautiful people. And they were so inspiring to me, like in like late high school. So shout out Tegan and Sarah. Love you. I'm going to get to number one because I'm running out of time, and number one I could talk about for the rest of my life. So we're going to hurry up and get there. But before we do, I'm going to play another one of my songs, last one for the episode, and then I'm going to talk to you about my number one biggest queer influence. But first, here is my song, Into the World. So yeah, this is Into the World by me, Tate Logan. Thanks.
It's kind of crazy, I can sleep just like a baby to the sound of people dying in movies. Stones on a Wednesday, what the hell difference does it make? Try to quit but gave that shit up in 2 weeks. Cause I don't know how to cope when everything is up in smoke. Care just a bit more. Critically lazy, better off pushing up daisies. I won't change, so what am I complaining for? Don't invite me to fight. If it's out of mind, it's out of sight. And I'm ashamed I've gotten comfortable in chaos. And I'm to blame, my consequences are my own loss. Dodging all the bus kills, chasing all the cheap. I'll probably be sleeping in when the world comes to an end. I'm too young for the stress of this soul fucked up mess. Give me one more distraction. Oh my god, I'm not built for the weight of the guilt to be the one to take action. I'm too young for the stress of this soul fucked up mess. Give me one more distraction. God, I'm not built for the weight of the guilt to be the one to take action.
All right, that was my song, Into the World. Thanks for jamming. And now, after this lovely list that I have created today, I am really excited about number one. This might come as like a shock to people, maybe not. Anyone that knew me from the age of 12 to 19 knows this about me. Like every single person I ever came into contact with for like 10 years of my life knows this about me, but I have luckily learned to tone down my obsession with this artist. But there is absolutely nothing remotely comparable to what this artist did for me and my journey and my identity, and that is Lady Gaga. What's crazy about my obsession and my love for Lady Gaga is that it was even before she was Lady Gaga. So before Lady Gaga took or coined that name or that term for her stage name, she was just Stephanie Germanotta, and she put out a lot of music, actually. She put out this EP called Red and Blue that is kind of this like punk rock mixed with like Gwen Stefani's No Doubt-esque vibe. Like, it's lots of, like, electric guitars and drums, and, I mean, she would do, like, Led Zeppelin covers and Metallica covers, and she was very much so this, like, underground, kind of, like, punk artist coming out of, like, the New York scene in probably 2005, 2006. And that was kind of the first time that I was exposed to her. And then she signed to Def Jam Records for a little while, did some other weird songs like Retro Dance Freak and Retro Physical and like Fooled Me Again and like Future Love and like these songs that most people have never heard except for like diehard Gaga fans. And then she got dropped from Def Jam Records and signed to Interscope, and that's when she did The Fame and like when Just Dance and Poker Face and stuff came out. And I was like aware of her. I liked the music. I liked the songs. But I remember the first time that I really had kind of like a queer awakening for Lady Gaga was when she performed Poker Face on American Idol in probably like 08. And she came out and it was basically just on the piano, but she had this like dancer behind her, like a solo dancer, just like kind of like breakdancing behind her, and then another person playing the violin. And Poker Face was at the top of the charts for months and months in 2008-2009, and no other pop star was like doing what she was doing at the time. Like, she was like, oh yeah, my number one record that's like gone platinum in like 15 different countries, yeah, I'm not gonna perform it the way that you know it. I'm gonna come out here with a violinist and my piano and have some dude breakdance behind us, and that's what you're gonna get on national television. And I remember thinking that was so, so cool. And honestly, then it was just like a downward spiral for me from there. Like, I became so obsessed that it was probably unhealthy, but whatever. I had posters of her all over my room. I had every CD she ever put out, every remix CD, holiday special, movie, documentary, whatever you can call it. Because at the time, I was totally in the closet, like 100% in the closet. No one knew that I was queer, except for me. Like, no one at all. And I was really, really, really struggling with who I was. And she was kind of this outlet for me to be queer without anyone knowing I was queer, kind of. That's kind of like the easiest way I can explain it. Because she was constantly fighting for, at the time, marriage equality and against Prop 8 in California. She was, you know, just a huge advocate for the LGBTQ plus community. Also, if you don't know, Lady Gaga's bisexual. She's dated multiple women and men in her life. So if you're unfamiliar with that, she's not just an ally. She's also in the community herself. But I just remember, like, because she was promoting this sort of, like, just, like, being LGBT positive and supportive and everything, I felt like that was an easy way for me to also defend the community as someone in the closet, because it was like everybody knew I liked her music and I liked her as an artist. And so it wasn't bizarre for me to, as a teenager or young teenager, to also be influenced by her like cultural stances. So I could be like, well, Lady Gaga defends the gay community, so I'm going to too. And like, I'm also for marriage equality, and I also am for gay rights, and like whatever, whatever. And it was kind of a way that I could like create this wall between my beliefs and who I was and the fear of what that could kind of like mean and what the consequences would be for that growing up in a small southern town. And so being a fan of hers was like an outlet for me to explore my queerness without having to directly identify it. And that was really, really crucial and important to me as a, you know, developing queer person at 13, 14, 15 years old. And it was just so cool and so inspiring to me to not only have her have like queer references in her music. I mean, Poker Face is literally about sleeping with a man and fantasizing about being with a woman while you're sleeping with that man. Like, that is what the whole song is about. Look up the lyrics, look up any interview. She's having sex with a dude and thinking about a woman right out the gate. That is already very gay. But also in her choice of like media and her music videos, I mean, in the Love Game music video, she has two women making out, which was really eye-opening for me at the time. And then also a little bit later on her second record, The Fame Monster, the Alejandro music video is very, very queer. There's lots of, you know, gay men dancing. It's very erotic in the way that Lady Gaga is kind of like the alpha in the situation. Like, she's basically pretending to I don't know what I'm allowed to say on this, like on the radio, but she's like basically sleeping like or emulating doggy style with these men as if she is the giver and they are the receiver. That's kind of the easiest way I can explain it. And these men are in Speedos and high heels, and it's just very, very erotic and sexual. And I don't know, just at the time, I was like, damn, this is so cool. Like, it's so weird. It's so gay. Like, I love this. But it was more than just that, you know? Like, I've seen Lady Gaga live numerous times, and every time that I have gone to one of her shows, she just spends a lot of the time talking about queerness and the LGBT community. And, you know, as a very impressionable and scared teenager, that meant a lot to me. Like, people say, like, concerts are where they feel safe, and that's true, because the very first concert, or the very first time that I really ever felt like I belonged somewhere, was the first time that I saw Lady Gaga live. And what's cool about this is I'm going to loop it back to the beginning of the episode. Semi Precious Weapons, my number 5 band on this list, opened for her. So it was just, like, so much queerness in one room in one night, and as someone that was still in the closet, it was so safe and comforting and cool to me. And I remember going home after that show and like bawling my eyes out in a good way. Like, I was crying because I felt so accepted. And I was like, this is a world, this is a fan base in which I belong and in which people would respect me. And it caused me to create all of these friendships over the internet with like other Lady Gaga fans. Like, there was this kid Wayland that I was really good friends with, and this kid Holly that I was really good friends with that now goes by Hayden. And these people were also queer and also fans of Lady Gaga, and they lived in other parts of the country. And we would talk to each other all the time on like IM Messenger just about how we were gay, and the only reason that we knew each other and we had each other as someone to like count on and rely on before we came out was because of this artist connecting us together. Like, we were Lady Gaga friends or Lady Gaga fans and friends because of this musician. And that was so special and so cool that I was like meeting people that I felt like I could talk to and be safe around before I was ready to come out, all because of this community that this artist had created for me. And no one will ever be able to take that away from me. Like, I'm the biggest Lady Gaga fan in the world. I'm literally ready to fight to the death with anyone that would like to come over right now. My address, no, I'm just kidding. But for real, I'm pretty confident that I'm the biggest fan. But seriously, it's kind of weird to think about now, because I've grown so much and I'm so confident in who I am now and my journey and being in a queer relationship and being a queer person and being a trans person and being someone that had to overcome a lot of obstacles and a lot of hurdles. And just now I'm in a place where I feel safe and I feel confident, and I don't even really think about it as much anymore, you know, because I just live my day-to-day life and I'm happy and I feel fulfilled and I feel successful and I feel whole. And it really wasn't always like that for me, you know? And Lady Gaga, as silly as it may sound to you, really, truly saved my life at 14 years old. And so even now, you know, like, I don't really listen to her all that much anymore. Every now and then a song will come on in the car, it'll come on my playlist, and I have this moment where I'm back in my room in Beaufort, South Carolina, alone, sitting in my bedroom with posters of her all over my wall, and just thinking, like, it's okay to be who I am, and maybe one day I'll be strong enough to tell the world. And she, as a musician and as an artist, really, really comforted me in those times where I didn't feel like I'd ever belong. And I'm just so grateful for that. Like, that's, and it's so funny, like, she'll never know. I mean, I think she does know, you know, that she's had that like effect on people. And it's really cool to watch her succeed now in the way that she has, and to like be in movies and have the success that she did with A Star Is Born and being on American Horror Story and, you know, having the Vegas residency. Like, all of that's really cool. And it almost feels like she's a different person than the person that I was so obsessed with as a teenager. But it's cool, and I'm really happy that she's like continued to have a really successful career and be such an incredible person and artist. But that long blonde haired disco stick carrying motherfucker that I fell in love with at 14 feels like a different person for some reason. That's so funny. But yeah, so Thank you, Lady Gaga. There's no way in hell she'll ever listen to this. If she does, yo, what's up? You changed my life. Thank you. But yeah, so that's my list. That's my God's honest list. There it is. At number 5, Semi-Precious Weapons. At number 4, David Bowie. At number 3, Elton John. Number 2, Tegan and Sarah. And at the number 1 spot, Lady fucking Gaga. So thank you so much for tuning in today. I know this episode was different. If you liked this episode, hit me up. Tell me on Twitter or Instagram or TikTok. Because I think it'd be cool to do more stuff like this, where I interview people sometimes, and then other episodes I do like countdowns or lists or shoutouts or maybe discuss important topics. I want this radio show to be as cool and as weird as you want it to be and as I want it to be. So there are no rules, and I think that that's really, really exciting. So if you like this episode, let me know. Maybe we'll do more like this. But make sure to tune in next week. I am here at Adobe every single Monday at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern. This is Punk Goes Pride. I have been your host, Tate Logan. Thanks so much for tuning in. I think it'll be fun to throw in one more song here at the end, because why not? So here's my cover of Jessie's Girl. Thanks for tuning in. Love you guys. Be safe. Have a good week.